Okay, one of the motivations I think of this conference, maybe the main idea, is that in the large and limit gauge theories can be described hopefully in some useful way by string theory. And if that's true, then there has to be, in principle, one would think, a procedure to derive directly the string work action from the gauge theory. So they give you the gauge theory, and you do something probably involving the large number of loops or something, and you get the string action. So I'm going to argue now what that procedure is, at least in some cases, some particular cases, one can reconstruct certain limits of the string work action. And I'm going to use the ADS-50 correspondence because then I know what action I want to get, thanks to the Mandrasena duality. In the case of the UN in equal 4 to PMI, we know that we want to get type 2B on ADS-5 process path. And the basic idea is to use all these procedures that we have been hearing these three nice talks about pin chains, and I'm not going to repeat that. But let me say what's the problem where this string action arises. The problem that we want to solve for this, this is a particular example, it can be done in many other cases, but the problem is we take two scalar fields, complex fields, and these are in the adjoint of these SUN gauge loops, they are N by N matrices, and we construct these string trace operators, gauge invariant operators, with J1Xs and J2Ys, and we are going to consider the case where J1 plus J2 is very large, and let me call it J, and we want to solve the problem of what's the number of dimensions of these operators at one loop. And it seems to be a simple computation, but then we'll get a very large, a huge matrix of a number of dimensions because all these operators mix among themselves, and there are many of them because I can put this in any order because they are commute. And it has been explained how one can do that with the Bethe ansatz, but in the particular case of very large number of operators, instead of the Bethe ansatz, one can write some classical action. I'm not going to explain how you get that, but this action depends on two fields, theta and phi, which depends at the same time on sigma and time. And you get this action where J is this shape here, the number of operators, and lambda is soft coupling. If you find the classical equations of motion of this action and find solutions and compute the energy, you get precisely the same answer that you get with the better answer when the number of operators is very large. This is a two-dimensional sigma model action. Moreover, let me say that when J goes to infinity, since J is out there, if we keep this thing fixed, which is lambda over J squared, this action can be treated classically because J is like 1 over H bar. So you get a classical limit. And let me call this then a string action, and this string action is derived directly from the field theory, so we didn't do anything of strings, just try to solve this problem in the field theory. And I can call it, like some try to call this a string action, although it doesn't look like that, because if you take the string moving in ADS-5 process 5 and take some Dicom frame and some limit, you get precisely the same action for the string moving there. So you take the string moving here, you take some limit, you get exactly the same. And this, if the actions are the same, then one is naturally left to identify the variables, but the variables here, theta and phi, represent a particular linear combination of these operators, and on the other side represent the position of the string, so you get a map such a way that they give you an operator here, a linear combination of these ones, you do some simple computation, and you immediately get the shape of a string that corresponds to that operator in the string type. So, wait.
Questions? Questions?
Well, tell us a little bit about how you got that action.
Sorry?
Tell us a little bit about how you got that action.
Okay, well, there was this map that was explained that you can take each field X and associate a spin. So if you see X, you get spin up. And if you see Y, you put a spin down. So this is a spin chain. And you get, as it was explained in this talk, you get the number of dimension is like a Heisenberg chain, a Hamiltonian of a Heisenberg chain. You have to find the eigenvalues. And what you see is that this is the chain is ferromagnetic, so the lowest energy states are all spins parallel. Then you have spin waves, and you can find an effective action for those spin waves that can be done using coherent states, or it can be done just from symmetry arguments. So this theta and phi tells you in which direction this spin point or which linear combination of x and y you have at a particular position. And these spin waves are the low energy effective degrees of spin of this system. And this term is just the, tells you that the spins want to be parallel. And if you quantize this, it tells you that there is a spin one half, so two states per particle. And this can be used, as I say, you can use symmetry arguments. The only thing you need to do is to find these numbers here that can be computed. And the other property is that if you take this limit, lambda has to be very large. So you need some way to protect this, some argument to see that it doesn't have a loop for it.
Why you cannot do that for QCD? Why can't you do some similar things in QCD?
That was, I guess, Niklas talked about that in Ferretti, Heise, and Sarembo did that. And they obtained an SU2 Bessuminum Mitten model for the one loop anomalous dimension of certain operators in QCD. But the thing I want to stress is that if you actually want to do and derive the actual QCD string that you want to know about, you have to have a way to compute all loops in gauge theory. So this is not a magic procedure. This just tells you, suppose you want to know how to solve the field theory, if you don't know if it has a string description. So this tells you how the string description will come from that. But you need to know compute all loops.
Okay. What can you say about this trick?
Well, I think, isn't it? What can you say about this discrepancy problem from this point of view?
Well, I think here, at least as I understand it, the classical action, which is a string action, emerges only when they go to infinity and we give this fix. But if you do that, lambda has to go to infinity. So this is the. So you get the classical or the string action only for lambda going to infinity. So there is no reason why this has only one loop correction. There has been some arguments by Sanon and Santambrogi, which applies to the BMN limit. And from there, you can deduce that this is protected. But if you have some other terms which appear as three loops, they are not necessarily protected, and they can have the function of lambda behave some way for small lambda and behave some other way for large lambda. So that's also, I guess, I agree with your point of view, but from this other perspective.
I want to ask a question which a little bit connects to your last statement. And when you calculate, okay, it's a technical problem, right? You have a huge matrix, you want to calculate its eigenvalues. When we do calculation on QCD or QCD type theories, we always assume that the gauge coupling is weak and the loops are normal loops of the weak coupling expansion, right? Now, when you approach it from the other side, from the string side, or I guess CFT side, the coupling, the Toft coupling is large, okay? And strictly speaking, I don't see the reasons why even in two loops, in the first and in the second loop, there should be a kind of, because one is weak coupling expansion, another is kind of, I don't understand whether it's the same expansion or is it a different expansion. Can you comment a little bit on that? How do we see, you said it's protected, how do we see, let's say forget about third loop, okay, three loops is almost beyond the horizon. Let's say we are talking about the first and the second loop. How do you say a priori that it's going, it must be the very same expansion as the weak coupling expansion in QCD?
Well, it's not clear. Here I'm doing an expansion in the field, as you say, for small lambda. And one thing that I want to comment independently of that is that this thing is completely fixed by the symmetry. So the only thing you need to know is here that it's an F of lambda. If somebody computes 10 loops and this function is a little bit different, I mean, the action will still be the same. So that's one point. But in this particular case, if you compute two loops, you get that you don't get any lambda squared here. There's no contribution from two loops to this term. You can compute three loops, four loops, and that cannot be done, hasn't been done. But three loops maybe yes, but then there is this argument from supersymmetry that this doesn't have this particular function, has only one loop contribution. And you are based on that. Now you can have higher derivative terms and they are suppressed by 1/j². So you can have four. This is the only term with two derivatives that I can write for this effective action. And this is protected. Now you can write terms with four derivatives and this will go like 1/j². So when j goes to infinity, those terms will be smaller. although they can be enhanced in this limit because I'm keeping this fixed of lambda going to infinity. So one has to rely in some, that there is no theorem like that, but one has to believe that there is no correction or there is no term that break down in this limit, but that's
true. Well, do I understand you correctly that the protection you mentioned comes from supersymmetry?
For this particular case, for this particular term.
So if there is no supersymmetry, you may not recover this equality,
you will
right?
recover, but you have to compute our loop here and get the correct.
No, I'm not speaking. I mean, if we can compute everything, we can compute everything, no matter in what approach.
No,
I'm speaking of what we can do today.
No, but my point is exactly that you don't need to compute. So if this is 1 or 1.2, this still is a ferromagnetic chain. As long as this thing doesn't change sign, okay, you say you cannot compute the loop, so you don't know what this is, but it will just be a number. Then that was my argument, that you can know the form of the action just from symmetry argument. Okay, this is not for QPU because it's just for this operator. In QPU you have to work more, but the argument is that even if you don't know how to compute all loops, with this you can have some idea what you are going to get.
I have a very simple but practical question. So when you're doing calculation in QCD, when you know starting from two loop level, anomalous dimension becomes scheme dependent, which means, for example, if somebody calculates a loop anomalous dimension and I calculate it as well, I'm ready to accept that anomalous dimension will be different because schemes that we're using are also different. So now we are comparing here calculations which have been done on string theory side and gauge theory side. How do we advance the scheme which has been used on gauge theory side matches the one which was on string theory side?
Side is everything is fine, so.
But the point is that even if you have finite theory, you have finite normalization of the company.
No, in the string side. In the string side, there is no, this is just a classical string with a finite level. From here, there is a diversion, as you said. And I'm not sure. I think there has to be some way.
It's not, if you're talking about N equal 4 theory, I know the theory is finite.
No, I'm not referring to that. I'm not referring that. As you say, this comes from the life that you have to subtract some operators so that the magic element is finite. That's in the field theory.
Okay, I think I can answer that question. So scheme dependence in some sense means you don't really know what the coupling constant is. You could express the coupling constant as a series of the coupling constant. However, if you do this here and replace lambda by some function of lambda, then you see that actually you destroy the expansion in lambda prime because you get J squared terms. So now if you redefine the coupling constant, you certainly destroy this BMN kind of scaling. So if you want to compare, you should pick a scheme where BMN scaling works.
I understand this, but you're talking about strong coupling regime. I'm thinking, imagine I come with ansatz that for strong coupling regime, I have a relation between two schemes which goes inverse powers of coupling constant. If you're talking about region of large lambda, at V coupling, I agree that if I start changing lambda by a series of lambda, I will break this BMN scaling. But if I'm talking about large lambda limit, in the large lambda limit, I'm relating two schemes in inverse expansion, inverse powers of coupling constant. I will preserve BMN scaling, and I will generate additional terms.
I think there is no non-relation how you do this in both sides. But now, what I was saying before is that if you do on the string side, it's such a rotating string. That has a finite tendency. So in the string side, there doesn't seem to be any problem with the infinity. So that's very curious because here it comes, these anomalous dimensions come precisely from the diversion. In the bulk, they don't come from there, so it's not clear what the relation is.
Okay.
I want to comment on this question. Question which Misha Shiffman asked. If you look at string side, how you get that action on string side, you get lambda term multiplying second derivative term, lambda squared term multiplying fourth derivative term, lambda cubed term multiplying sixth derivative term. So the most likely scenario is that this sixth derivative term gets randomized. So it gets non-trivial function of lambda and j. And the two limits will not commute there. But first and second derivative and fourth derivative terms are protected.
Supersymmetry.
Yeah, essentially by supersymmetry. And in six derivative term also you have a term which is sort of quadratic in field, but with three derivatives. These terms are also protected and they will be BMN. they sort of explain why BMN leaves. So certain six derivatives are protected, but certain are not. That's a statement. But could you also comment on the meaning of this action? It's actually a coherent state action, so it's actually
coherent. Yes, you can derive this. One way to derive is to do a coherent state, which means that some paradoxically, perhaps you put independent state of each side of the thing. So here I put some linear combinations x and y, given by theta and phi, and here and here. And then I compute the mean value of the Hamiltonian in that particular state, and you get this. That's one way. Yeah, it's just thinking in the low energy effective action.
In general, it's not mapped into the coordinate space action. It's a phase space action.
Well, okay, yeah. Well, yes. Mm-hmm. Because this is in phase space, it's just ordered in handling.
Okay, very good. Let's thank the speaker again. Now, Radu, well done.
With the necessary copyrights to Mark Spradlin. So we've heard this morning, is this thing on? So we've heard this morning, for the third time, we've heard this morning about the relations between n equals 4 Yang-Mills, integrable models, and high-energy QCD. For n equals 4 Yang-Mills, there is a complementary picture coming from the worksheet, and my task is to give you the 5-minute version of what is known, and especially what is not known, which is quite a lot about this theory. So, first off, why on earth should we care about the worksheet anyway? Well, to begin with, some of us are string theorists, and occasionally it's refreshing to go back to the worksheet and recall how little we actually know. But at any rate, from the point of view of computing anomalous dimensions, the worksheet would uniformly cover all operators in gauge theory, and with no restrictions on loop order, length of operators, or anything like that. Which is to be contrasted with our current understanding of the gauge theory approach to integrability. And on a more philosophical note, it provides the means to attempt a proof of ADS-CFT, as well as providing a better understanding of n equals 4 in general, and perhaps extending to other theories as well. Now, after having said that, what do we really know about the worksheet, besides that it's particularly complicated? So we know that the restriction to the bosonic sector of the theory is classically integrable, as well as that the full supersymmetric theory is classically integrable. This can be proven by constructing a Lax pair. It can be shown that the conserved quantities following from this Lax pair survive quantization, at least perturbatively, around the BMN limit. And it can be also shown that using gauge theory information this time, that at infinite worksheet coupling constant, this conserved quantity still exists. The people responsible for the statements I'm making are here. We have a theory which exhibits an integrable structure at zero coupling, infinite coupling, and epsilon perturbation around those two ends. So it is perhaps not completely unreasonable to imagine that it is actually integrable for all values of the coupling. So assuming that we are not misled by this statement, what do we want to know? Well, we really want to know everything, but since everything is hard to define, we could settle for the time being for finding anomalous dimensions, namely all anomalous dimensions the anomalous dimensions of all operators in gauge theory. These guys should come from solving the Virasoro constraints on the worksheet, which say that the worksheet energy as a function of whatever parameter we have in there is some fixed number. Here picked one for no particularly good reason. So what we need to know is we need to know the worksheet energies. And here there is a little caveat which needs to be mentioned. There is a substantial difference for a theory defined on a plane and a theory defined on a cylinder, as we would like to have a string theory. The statements made up here are mostly true for the plane. For the cylinder, they are a little bit more subtle. Part of the structure here disappears, some of it remains nevertheless. So we identified what we need the energies, and then the questions start pouring on us. And here are two of them. First of all, what is the right approach, really? I mean, this theory is supposed to be integrable, but it's not integrable until we have the solution. For bosonic theories defined on planes, on two-dimensional planes, that is, one usually starts with an S matrix, then one cranks the, turns the crank called the Bethe-Ansatz, and out comes the spectrum. So if we were dealing only with the bosonic part of our string theory defined on the sphere, then this would be the answer. It would have exactly three states. These would be their masses, and M would be the dynamically generated scale of the theory. And, well, we could attempt to add the ADS-5 part and forge ahead, though the techniques are not exactly in place. It is not immediately clear that the Bethe-Ansatz, the way it is used for the sphere, actually goes through. We've heard a little earlier in this session about more powerful techniques, like the separation of variables and... what was the other one? The Baxter equation. Anyway, perhaps they can be used here. But this is really not a bosonic theory. We are really dealing with a supersymmetric theory with all sorts of junk around. So especially it is a massless theory. It has a coupling constant, and it is really on a cylinder. It sits in finite volume. Even for massless theories, it is possible to define some, according to some logic, of something like an S matrix, and attempt to use it in a procedure of this kind. Then various other kinds of problems kick in, but it can be tried, and it has been tried to use the most naive S matrices that can be written in this way, and. Well, since you haven't heard about the results, you can imagine what they are. Anyhow, since the main problem in what we tried to do there was that there was no coupling constant, and we couldn't identify it. Since our attempts, Joe Polchinski and Neely Aman cooked up some more ideas in some toy models on how to deal with the coupling constant dependence and finite volume as well. So perhaps it is time to try again. So since my 5 minutes are up, let us imagine for a second that all these problems are solved, and then what? We work hard, we find a bunch of numbers, and then what else can we do? Obviously, I cannot answer that since I don't know the answer to these first questions. However, a version 0.1 of the answer would be that we would like to deform this theory. And if we deform this theory, it is very likely that the integrable structure is lost. However, well, perhaps not all its traces are lost. And perhaps it is possible to compute unintegrated correlation functions on the worksheet using the traces that remain of the integrable structure. This is, for the time being, obviously a guess from the string theory perspective. However, a proof of principle is provided by the fact that such a procedure would work. Such a procedure actually works quite successfully in various sectors of the gauge theory, where it is actually possible to compute bits and pieces of the correlation functions. So now, since my time is really up, let me reiterate Matthias' question: who on earth ordered integrability here? And put something provocative up. Thank you.
Questions? No questions? No questions. Okay. Let's thank Rallo again. One question.
Usually when we have an integrable system, we celebrate because we can use that to solve and calculate something, right? What would be the most interesting thing to calculate?
Well, there was... Well, we really like to calculate everything, but well, I would be happy to be able to compute for the time being the worksheet energies, because that would give us all the anomalous dimensions. But
okay, so this is it for the morning. But, or, well, who else is talking?
Okay.
Well, any questions for the general panelists, once again? So we talked a lot about integrability and so on and the problems for QCD itself, but there's a limit of QCD where you ignore the data function. So there's the Banks-Zaks method, there's the idea of tuning the flavors so that you can separate the QCD expressions for the conformal parts and then the non-conformal parts, and you can identify them separately. Isn't it true that the conformal part of the theory could be integrable and have all the wonderful properties that you've been talking about?
Does it work? What I was saying is that if you go to conformal limits, the theory will be at least at two loop level to be integrable. But if you're talking about all loops, I don't know about all loops. But the observation which we made and which I don't really understand physics behind this hidden, that even at two loop level, if you're not in conformal phase, the integrability is still there, which means that conformal breaking terms, they don't violate integrability.
You take the QCD theory and you break it up into two parts. One part is the conformal part. It obeys all sorts of wonderful things like the Kruder relation, for example. Then there's other part which is conformal breaking. But this means that we have a whole, don't we have all sorts of wonderful results for the conformal part? And then you have a correction from the non-conformal part.
Cool. This Rubinstein is the question you're just asking, it's just the same question I put in my transparency at the end. If I would know where this negability came from, I would answer the question about all loop behavior in QCD.
One of the results that you mentioned, which I had sort of forgotten about, was this nice result that puts a limit on the anomalous dimensions for operators of built from a certain number of partons. We had this very interesting. You quoted this very interesting result that the anomalous dimension for an operator with a certain number of partons has to lie between yes. twice the cusp dimension times log yes. and L times the cusp dimension. Is there any? Has anyone provided any additional insight into why that formula would be true? Any connection with some other physics that we know about? Or?
First of all, we have to. The answer to this question is the following: that let's consider QCD, and you restrict yourself to the operator which have anomalous dimension, which scale like logarithms of the total number of derivatives. Then you ask yourself where the scaling came from. So why for certain operators you have log behavior, for certain you don't have. Then there is statement which goes as follows: that log n behavior of the anomalous dimension has to do to the soft physics on the QCD side. Another way, if I start with my operator, imagine you have many quarks. And then these quarks interact with each other on the light cone by exchanging gluons. So if you go to large limit, large conformal spin limit, large number of derivatives, you could describe this system by effectively replacing dynamical quark by Aeconal currents. And once you do this, you switch from original object, which was an operator built out of dynamical fields, into object which are Wilson loop. And then what you will see is that the logarithmic behavior of the anomalous dimension in field theory is linked into anomalous dimension of certain Wilson loops. And what's special about those Wilson loops, they have a cusp. And cusp has to do exactly to the point when quark point attached to the light cone. So this band I have shown you, it just simply tells you that if you have n particles on the light cone, you have two different alternatives. You could put two quarks aside. It will correspond to two particles separate on the light cone. It will give you lower bound. But then you could sort of spread them homogeneously like the light cone so that they will have equally separated. It will be upper bound.
So I gather from the way you looked at Martin that this is exactly what Martin's recent paper about cuspy strings actually.
Well, it's not, but they did it in their paper.
Uh-huh. But it can be seen from the stringy side from that point of view.
Yes.
I have a general question or comment about gauge string duality. So we better should dissociate integrability from gauge string. suppose there is some string theory which is dual to QCD or whatever confining gauge theory.
that string theory need not be integrable in that sense which we were discussing, namely as classical sigmodal on some space. It may be some non-compact Calabi-Yau space times whatever ADS with some cutoff, etc. So that model will not be integrable. So there will not be easy way to relate this maybe to that integrability which is discussed in the case of Young-Mills theory. So this integrability, this kind of naive integrability may be special to ADS. Even isolated conformal fixed points may not be necessarily integrable sigmodals on string side. So I'm basically making this comment hoping that somebody will comment whether we can still relate integrability observed in Enclose 4 to Young-Mills. There was some sort of disagreements whether one implies the other or...
I of course have no idea whether ultimately this integrability might be directly this higher loop integrability might be somehow useful to QCD or not, but I think it gives us the beautiful thing is that it sort of simply gives us a completely new tool in this ADS 5 causes 5 context. So, and this new tool might simply lead to the complete solution, at least of planar limit, and this way we might be able to really understand the dynamics of the correspondence. And then, as happened very often in two dimensions, it's extremely useful to have some exactly solvable idealized models, and then you can test all sorts of new ideas on this exact solution. I think that would be my point of view.
I have a question for Radu. You mentioned deformations that break the integrable structure on the world sheet. Is it possible to compare which deformations break integrability on the world sheet and the ones that would break integrability in the gauge theory side?
Well, roughly integrability is broken on the world sheet whenever one tries to take into account string splitting and joining, that is insertion of vertex operators. That translates on the gauge theory side into computation of correlation functions. That was essentially the reason why I give that example.
I also have one comment about the mismatch had three loops. So I think the current understanding of several people is now it's not the question why there is a discrepancy at three loops, but the real question is really why is there an agreement at one and two loops anyway? And I think it was you mentioned that, and I think, well, I mean, there might be some answers in the sense of if the theory has a local interaction and it has some large symmetry, then the answers might be the same at some leading order, but if you take into account quantum effects, maybe they are just broken. This might be an obvious answer, but still it doesn't quite explain it. Yeah, right. I mean, two loops is still simple. Yeah.
No. But what I think what Niklas, I mean, if you assume that also the string side can be turned into some kind of spin chain, and there are some indications for that, then you just see that. If you study these long-range spin chains, that basically, even the two loops, there's only one thing you can do. And then that the fun starts at three loops, because this is precisely where this, in the spin chain picture, you are first able to have these multi-spin interactions. And you simply get more structures and more possibilities, and such that it's still integrable. So this is sort of a technical reason, but it could be really the explanation for things.
Okay, I've been told that lunch is served, so we should thanks to the speakers.